Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, book clubs aren't just for women, and beer makes everything better.
I'm Nate.
I'm Mike.
And we're the Drunk Guys. For today on the Drunk Guys Book Club podcast, we are reading Packing for Mars by Mary Roach.
Book came out in 2010, and it explores, as the title tells us, the curious science of life in the void.
Now, this is non-fiction, I should say.
Yes, so we're checking off two boxes here with a lady writer and a non-fiction book.
And non-fiction, yeah.
So suck it. We're not just reading books by dudes about Norse gods.
Hey, I need a beer.
We totally need a beer. Let's start with this one, because it's fancy. You brought this, Nate.
Right, so since this book is Packing for Mars, the beer I brought today is called Red Thunder for the Red Planet.
Ooh, look at that.
I thought it was pretty sweet.
That is an excellent name.
This beer is made by Victory Brewing, and it was, I mean, it probably has more special things about it, but it was aged in wine barrels, I believe.
And I mean, maybe it's my imagination that it has a reddish. It's a darker colored beer,
mm-hmm.
But I just, is
it a little bit red?
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
Maybe around the edges.
Yeah, according to the spiel on the back, it's a porter aged in oak barrels that had previously held red wine. It's 8.5% alcohol. I think this was it says malt beverage aged in a wine barrel. So that means it's not technically a beer, just because of the sugar content or something. Must be from. Not just barley. It smells really nice.
It smells a little bit smoky, like that charred oak.
Yeah, but when you taste it, it has a sort of winey character to it. It doesn't taste like wine at all, but there's a let's say tart or something elements to it.
It's a tartness. Not like sour beer tart, but...
Oh, that's just fucking gross. That's...
We'll do one eventually, I'm sure.
That will be a bad day. That will be a very bad day. This is delicious. This is the kind of beer that excites me. Just something that really... exotic. Now that Pennsylvania, where Victory Brewing is an exotic place, but it's a beer as a porter aged in red wine barrels that you don't see. You see a ton of beers aged in bourbon barrels these days, which I love bourbon barrel aged beer. I mean, Goose Island Bourbon County Stout is probably my favorite beer of all time. Or if it's either that or Perrin Brewing's No Rules, which is another bourbon barrel aged beer, and that's what I really like. But everybody does that, so it's kind of becoming a standard thing. This is different. Red wine. I can think of one other beer I've ever had that was aged in a red wine barrel, and it was kind of shitty. I didn't like it so much. So this, and it was, you know, like an on tap only thing at a bar I was at. This is good. Very unique. Victory makes some solid stuff, so I'm not surprised. They make some really good beers. This is delicious. I think this was a one-off. I don't think they make this anymore. I think they just kind of did it, or it's retired now.
Sweet.
So we got in there, under the wire.
Nice.
So what's this book about?
So Mary Roach is a science author. She's not a scientist herself, but she writes really interesting, kind of funny books about a science topic, a very general science topic. And she clearly does a lot of research, and she goes to visit places and interviews people involved, and she makes just really kind of interesting pop science books about something funny.
I think she also, at least at one point, had a column, like a weekly column. Oh, fuck you. Spelling beer everywhere. A weekly column in, is it Scientific American or something like that? Like, she had some sort of science column, and one of her books is a collection of those columns. So I don't know if she still does that.
So this one is called Packing for Mars. It's about NASA and the space program. Actually, not just NASA. She talks about Russia as well, the Russian space program. Just about space and about how difficult it is to do anything in space, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
She has also written a book about called Stiff, which is about the science of dead bodies. About corpses, and she also wrote
one.
You
read that one, right?
I did read that one.
Yeah, Beverage Stiff.
It was good. And then she also, her most recent one, I believe,
Grunt.
It's called Grunt, which is about the military. That was also good. There were interesting things in that.
A lot of her titles, her books have one word titles, and then the very same subtitle. So, Grunt, the curious science of the military, or something like that. Then there's Stiff, the whatever of what happens. To dead fuckers. Then Gulp, the Adventures in the Alimentary Canal is another one. And then there's Bonk, the one about fucking. And then there's...
Really?
Yeah, it's called Bonk.
I mean, really?
It's probably a lot more than just humans fucking.
Did she get that from Christopher Moore?
That's right. Then she also has one that they had to give a different title in the States to, or they gave it a different title in the UK. It's called Spook. It's about like the afterlife and ghosts. But I forget which market they changed it to be called 6 Feet Over. I'm not sure because like spook could mean other things in different contexts to people and they didn't want to be accused of like going on it. But she writes about these various different things and they're all fun books. I mean, I've read a couple of them. You've read a couple.
Mm-hmm.
They're fun. They do what a pop science book is designed to do. They make you feel like you know some shit all of a sudden.
Yep.
You feel like you
And
just,
you do know some shit.
You do.
All of a sudden.
But it's painlessly done. You know, it's not like you sat through lectures on... the history of NASA, you get these fun little stories with interesting characters, and it's funny, and the data
funny,
is there.
A little funny footnotes that often have a little joke in them.
Yeah, it's really well written and entertaining. I have only read some of her works just because I can't really do too much of that right in a row. It kind of just, I mean, not that it's formulaic. I mean, she has her style. She writes about really different topics. But if you read like two back to back, you'd feel like, you know, you'd be a little overkill. You'd need a little cleanse the palate in between there. So I'll probably about due to read another one, actually, because I haven't read anything from hers in a bit. So I gotta say right off the bat, though, this title is a bit misleading.
Because it's called Packing for Mars, and it's only a little bit about Mars. It's mostly just about NASA, a little bit about the Russian space program as well. And it's about space, and it's about the Apollo program, the Gemini program, and the tests, and a lot of the testing that has been had to do to get people to actually do astronaut things. It's mostly really about the 60s.
Yeah, well, 60s and 70s. And how the various unsexy elements of astronauting get research developed and produced, you know, like figuring out how astronauts are going to take a dump, or how astronauts are going to eat, or brush their teeth, or whatever it is. Like, all these things that you are very simple, you don't give any thought to.
You completely take for granted.
In zero G, they all blow.
They're all really difficult. If there's any, I don't know if there's a specific message of this book, but something that definitely came through for me is being an astronaut, even though it might be spiritually awesome, is in fact incredibly annoying and uncomfortable almost the entire time.
It is. And, you know, if a good thing to confirm that or couple with, if you ever get a chance to read The Right Stuff by Tom Wolfe, that's all about the whatever the one John Glenn was in, because that wasn't Apollo. What was the thing? Was that Gemini?
Was that even Gemini at that
no,
point?
No, sure.
It's what, pre-Gemini.
Whatever that was, they had a name for it. I don't know. We're drunk. But there's a part in that, which is, we're getting off topic of Mary Roach, but the guys would sit in the launch pad, you know, in their cockpit for hours as they go through tests, and then he just kind of slips in there. Oh, and he has an 8-inch thermometer up his ass because they want to monitor every bodily function they can. Mm-hmm. So he's got a fucking healthy-sized, dick-sized thermometer in his ass in the name of science. So that's kind of not cool. But Mary Roach doesn't go down the dick road, but she is not shy with shit jokes.
Oh, yeah. She has whole chapters about every bodily function, really.
And they're funny. They are totally. Really entertaining. So some of the things they talk about, the first chapter, I believe, was about how they pick teams for, like, the International Space Station and figuring out how people are going to work together, because space is such a stressful, unique situation.
And this is almost the most application to Mars. If NASA or Russia or China...
Mars one, man, don't count them out.
...was going to send a crew to Mars, they're going to have to be together for at least, was it 6 months?
One way.
A year?
One way is 6 months,
right? It's like
6 months
one way, and let's say they do a month on the surface of Mars, and that's probably even optimistic, considering how much, like, food and water and everything they need for supplies, and then they're going to get back on a thing, and then launch back and make it back to Earth. We're talking, like, you know, 8-9 months to a year. That crew has to work together and get along and not hate each other.
You're talking over a year.
Over a year.
If it's 6 months each way, and that's the ideal circumstance.
So the very first chapter is talking about some of these sort of isolation tests that they did, where they put like six people in something like the biodome, although it wasn't technically the biodome.
Because Pauly Shore wasn't there.
Pauly Shore, not part of the test. They put like six people just to see what happened, just to see if people could you know, get along. The answer is no.
No.
The answer is people had tons of conflict in that, even though, you know, spending every waking moment with a particular group of human beings is going to be so incredibly annoying. And the things that, you know, you have patience for when you first meet somebody, you suddenly have no patience for after 3 or 4 months of being in their presence the entire time. One of these isolation tests, they had to cancel early because of a fight that broke out. You know, like, literally, people were fighting each other. And so they just had to cancel it, and even other crazier stuff, too.
That's one of the strongest arguments against polygamy right there. you want to murder your spouse, yeah, not counting me, honey, but you want to murder your spouse after a little while. Imagine having six people you have to spend all day with. What they should do, if they want to figure out a successful Mars crew, hire whatever assholes figure out who's going to be on the real world and just have them do the exact opposite of whatever they do. Because they just breed conflict. They're like, this is going to be perfect. The openly, like, a bisexual trans person and the Baptist minister. Let's put them together. Fuck you guys. And the fucking, like, super macho douchebag guy and the women's studies professor, put them in the room. Like, they just, let's find the opposites. Like, pick those people. Like, have that skill set. It's like, hey, guys, can you just do the exact opposite of whatever your instincts are? And we will get to fucking, you know, Neptune with that crew.
Yeah. And, you know, the very, this is the, still the first chapter. Mary Roach goes to Japan and she's watching some of the Japanese space program astronauts, or not astronauts, but they're doing a more or less simulated type of like 3-4 weeks all together. And what's other, what's also was funny is that the scientists watching them fuck with the participants as much as possible. You know, you're told, well, you know, one of the tests is making 1,000 paper cranes because it is supposed to test not only like how precise you are, but if you can be precise and not get frustrated after making a thousand of these, you know, doing this for hour after hour after hour. And they'll, and but the scientists will also do things like today, let's have their lunch be 1 hour late and see who complains about it, you know, and let's see who doesn't clean up after themselves, or who doesn't, you know, who, you know, boasts to the other person about blah, blah, blah. And so they're not only are they under total observation, but the scientists are just fucking with them.
That sounds, I mean, being an astronaut sounds pretty cool. That job sounds a little cooler right now.
It does. Can you just figure out how to fuck with them
just
right now?
Just insidiously fuck with people's heads. Because that's right? That's not just like, I'm going to punch him in the balls. That's creatively mean. Let me make his lunch an hour late. That's going to piss him off so much.
Mary Roach said that she signed, in the book, she talks about how she signed up for one of these programs. And they, she got a, it was for the Eurospace Agency. She signed up to do one of these things. And, you know, they, she got a call to reconfirm some of her details or something like that. But the call came at 4:30 a.m. her time. And she was super annoyed. Oh my, you know, because it, you know, came in the middle of the night. Probably she realized afterward
that was the test.
That was intentional to see if you could handle that type of interruption in your, you know, that type of interruption, how annoyed. And then she failed. Well, she didn't get a call back to actually participate. And she says, yeah, that's probably what happened. I didn't handle that well.
I think one of the things they discuss is that giving people a sort of, they have to have jobs all the time. Mm-hmm. That helps ameliorate the stresses of, because it's not like they're hanging out in the biodome just chilling.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, they have these tasks that are stupid sometimes, but they're designed just to, so you have something to do. So if you're going in, oh, I have to go measure the water level in this thing, even though it hasn't changed and it's never going to change, but you have to do it just so it gives structure to your day. And that's one of the things they've kind of designed into the astronaut routine to keep people from strangling each other.
Yeah. On the International Space Station, this is also in the book, on the International Space Station, something like 70 or 80% of the actual work they do is just maintaining the space station to make sure it keeps working. Like, only like 20, 25% of what they do is actual science experiments or that type of research. Most of it is just keeping them, it's just very routine maintenance tasks that have to be done over and over again.
A good percentage of that, though, is just 100% of their time is also spent being awesome because they're in fucking space.
Because they're astronauts.
They are in space, which is cool. But yeah, they're given these things. How much can they actually fucking maintain at the space station, though? Because it's, you're talking about like billions of dollars of equipment, and there's some guy there with a wrench. Can't, you got to check the levels of this thing. Can you go? What can they really do? They're like, oh, we need you to get out there and go buff up that Hubble telescope lens for us. No, they're given like busy work.
I think actually it's not all busy work. I think, you know, because it's the beginning of space travel, every single system is so vital, even if one important system fails, and there are like a dozen vital systems on the space station, if even one fails, they're all fucked. They're all dead.
Look at, you know? What was that one, the Columbia? They right, fucking yeah. Roasted because the fucking lug nuts were shitty or something. It was like a really small problem with the heat shield.
It wasn't the lug nuts. It was like there was a tiny little hole in the heat shield that happened because something, a chunk of ice broke off of the main rocket, right? Because the rocket is liquid helium. So that's kept at a very cold temperature. So it accumulated ice on the launch pad on liftoff. A chunk of ice fell down and knocked into the sort of like silica heat shield of the space shuttle. And then nobody really knew. I mean, maybe they knew there might be a little bit of damage, but then when they re-entered the atmosphere after their, like, 10-day mission, that's when the tiny little hole, the tiny little damage to the heat shield meant that that part of the space shuttle wasn't protected anymore, and the like, thousands of degree heat, you know, blew up the whole space shuttle.
Well, NASA knew, though, they determined in their investigation, even if they had known about it or had confirmed that it, there was no way they could have fixed it.
I actually read, because I'm really a nerd, an entire report.
Oh, I just play one on TV.
Right, no, I do not just play one on TV. I read this whole report about someone trying to figure out, even if on day one, NASA knew that Columbia was up in space, there's a problem, they're not going to be able to make their way back. Could they prep the other shuttle, launch it in time, rescue the astronauts, and, you know, get back to space, get back to Earth safely? The answer is no. But it was really interesting reading about all the different things they would have had to do to make that happen. And this would have been like an emergency, like total emergency, because it takes months to prep a shuttle.
Sure.
It takes months to do all those things.
Man, it must have been a long time for that Pornhub video to load that you read that whole article.
Listen, this was a really interesting article. I'll send it to you.
That's fine. Yeah, I pay for high-speed internet, so I don't have to read that shit. Pornhub loads when I need it. Done. What am I looking for? Click, 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 click. Fap, fap, fap. Now I can go begin my day. Well, you know what it reminds me of? The Martian. Andy Weir, The Martian. There's the thing where they send the rocket, and they're like, oh, the rocket's not really prepped yet, but we got to send them some shit. And they send it, and of course it fucks up.
Yeah.
Because there's 100,000 fucking, or a million even, different things parts, to check.
The space shuttle is 5 million parts.
So if you miss a tenth of 1% of that, you're still talking a huge number.
You're talking like thousands of broken parts.
So to just rush it is not an option.
No.
Spoiler, Martian, whatever.
Although, even though this book is called Packing for Mars, if you want to learn more about what it might be like to actually go to Mars, the science behind actually going to Mars, The Martian is probably better.
Well, Martian's better if you want to know about what it would be like on the surface of Mars itself.
Specifically the Mars stuff.
Yeah, this uses Packing for Mars. The title uses is sort of, I don't know, like clickbait, but it's really not about Mars.
No.
It's about space in general, which is fine. I mean, there's a serious overlap in those topics. But there's very little about Mars, except for the fact that going to Mars would be fucking long, shitty and boring, and loud as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I got from the book about the travel to Mars. All those things, sure, but there's a lot more a lot more chapters about how dog food companies were the ones making astronaut food.
Yeah.
Or turds floating in space.
So one thing that Mary Roach does, in at least all the books I've read, is it's gross. You know, it is like gross. She is not shy about going to like the gross science and even make some funny gross jokes, which are totally awesome. But it is like the books are kind of disgusting. And in real, but of course, astronauts really do poop, you know? So that is a totally legitimate place to go when you're writing a book about Mars, but you know, about going to Mars or about the space program. But not many other authors would do that. And her other books do the same kind of thing. It's almost like these are the best perfect books for, you know, 15-year-olds or 15-year-old boys.
Right.
It was like perfect.
Could make it seem kind of cool because it's like, oh, space is cool. Shit and farts are funny. It's perfect. It's got something for everybody. Now, if only she had a chapter about jerking off into.
Well, actually, she does.
There is a part of sex, right?
There is a sex part about this book.
That's right.
About how on the Russian, on Mir, the two tubes of borscht were labeled blonde and brunette.
I don't remember this.
Yeah, well, okay. There is a part about the sex in space.
I was really hung up on the turd floating.
We'll talk about that next. But no, because the Mir space station crews were all male, and in fact, all astronauts were male for quite a bit of the space program.
They buggered their way across the heavens.
But apparently in Russia on Mir, which was a Russian space station, they had like tubes of food. Where the food were in tubes, and there were like two different. There was like white borscht and red borscht. One was one the astronauts labeled blonde, one that labeled brunette.
So they're banging a tube of borscht?
They didn't say it specifically, but that's what it sounded like to me.
Now, I don't know. I mean, I've had borscht once or twice. I'm not really a fan of cold soups. And I've jerked off once or twice. And if you recall our episode on Outliers, I am an expert. I've done my 10,000 hours. The jerking off with a fucking tube of soup, that is cumbersome. I mean, putting the cum in cumbersome by jerking off with a tube of soup. I can understand if you're like a weird fucking food fetishist and you're like, oh yeah, getting a bear claw hand job now. But to just fuck a tube of soup.
Bear claw job?
That bear claw job, that's, you know, that could be a thing. That could be our ticket out of this middle class life. Just bearclawhandjobs.com.
Trademark. Quick, buy the domain right now.
I am sure that's taken. Oh man. anyway, to just put your cock in a fucking tube of soup that's cold in the vacuum of space, that is
in the space station, floating in the vacuum of space.
I mean, it's both simultaneously really cool, because you're like floating above the Earth, but those astronauts must have also thought, shit, this is my rock bottom. I have hit rock bottom. I'm fucking a tube of soup.
Because the highest rock bottom ever. Anyway, so Mary Roach didn't go full details on this story, but what she implied, that's what she implied. That's totally what she implied.
That is so sad. That's why we won the Cold War. We were fucking tubes of soup. That's ridiculous.
So, all right. So that's like chapter two. That's right in the beginning of the book. Anyway, some more chapters.
Well, let's open up another beer. Finished that fucking Red Thunder, and it is fucking with my mind already, and my bladder. This is the one I brought. This is from Southern Tier, which is, of course, in upstate New York, and it is a beer called Unearthly.
It's Canada South?
It is, yes. It's Canada South. I like that. It is an Imperial India Pale Ale. I have had this before. I don't know if you've ever had this. Southern Tier, they make some really nice stuff.
I've had some Southern Tier before.
It is, I'm trying to find the details on here, 9.5% alcohol. Oh my god, we're going to fucking die today. It's no secret we record more than one episode at a time sometimes.
I think we should keep that a secret.
I think if you are a crafty listener,
You'll know. you'll be able to tell by the tone of my voice that, you know.
Well, when it alternates episodes, and we're like, well, this one has themes of masculinity in the face of changing technology. And then like the next episode, like, motherfucking book is good.
This was hilarious. I love this book.
Too many pages book. This is a great IPA, though. Mm,
this is good.
And you could feel there's some potency to it, but it is not overly strong.
Nope.
Alcohol or hop-wise, it's really nicely balanced.
I like this.
You know, one of the things that always annoys me about these beer labels, though, brewed with 4 varieties of hops and 3 types of malts. That's not dramatically impressive. Most beers are brewed with a couple of types of malts and are brewed with at least 1 type of hops. So they have more hops than perhaps normal. You could do a beer with 1 type of hops and 1 type of malts. It'd be kind of boring. And in fact, there's a name for that. It's called a smash beer. Single malt and single hop. Smash.
That's more rare, more unique.
It's distinct. It has its own little title. And the reason why people make those, especially homebrewers make them, as I am a bit of a homebrewer now, so you can really learn what each ingredient tastes like. Because unlike, you know, baking a cake where I could just kind of take a little taste of a piece of chocolate or the batter and get a sense, beer is a couple of, you know, at least several week process between when you do the work and when you drink the finished product. So It's not like you could be like, well, let me try one that has 10% rye in it or whatever, and you could just try it right then and there. There's a delay. So a good way to get a working vocabulary, make some smash beers, and you can do that. I've seen some commercially available smash beer. Magic Hat makes a few. But that's also not super helpful necessarily to the home brewer because you're not brewing on a fucking state-of-the-art set of equipment. You're brewing with, like, when I brew with a pot and an Apache stove in my backyard, because my wife has banished me from the kitchen, so I can't do it there. I'm like, oh, I'm just sitting in the yard, and the mailman sees me out there, thinks like I'm a hillbilly, like fucking making moonshine or something, which that's on the horizon. There will be moonshine coming out of this brewery.
Sweet.
That will be a terrible day. That will be a bad thing. But this beer, whole bunch of different hops, whole bunch of different malts. I don't think they even tell you which fucking types of hops they are. Yeah, it's really cool that it has all these different things, but if I don't know what they are, that doesn't give me a lot of information. It's like if I say, oh, have our cheeseburger, it's got 4 different types of cheese. Well, which types of cheese? It's like, oh, it's 3 different shades of American cheese. It's one thing. Or if I'm like, oh, it's got Gorgonzola and Colby Jack. Like, there's a huge difference in those things. So I think sometimes these beer makers put these things on the label as a way to kind of like razzle-dazzle drunk people. Totally works on me.
Easy to razzle dazzle drunk people.
Like, ooh, look at the shiny.
Success.
That being said, this is an excellent, excellent double IPA. So, Mary Roach has some other chapters about...
The funniest other chapters is the one about shitting in space. This is the next best chapter.
I mean...
This is the ultimate chapter.
It might be number 2 in your book. Number 1 for me. It is the funniest.
So, turns out... we definitely here on Earth take gravity for granted, because up in space you know, first of all, having gravity really helps with what in the book is called clean separation. Really helpful for that. Second, up in space, water is so water is so heavy and there's such a limited supply of it. There's no way up on the space station or the space shuttle that they could use water to, you know, in a toilet to take care of your shit. That's not flushing. A euphemism. You cannot flush with water because there's no way they could waste that much water.
Right. They don't have a water main hooked up to it. You have to ship that water up in space, and every pound you add onto the space station, and a pound of water, is not much volume at all.
I think
thousands and thousands of dollars.
Thousands of dollars for each pound. And in fact, something like shipping up a astronaut is about their weight in gold. That's how much money it costs to actually send an astronaut or even just water into space. It's literally worth its weight in gold. So it's so valuable. There's no way they're going to use water to flush a toilet.
I bet there are some rappers that use gold to flush a toilet.
Maybe he flushes his toilet with gold, but...
If he totally mislearns the lesson of this, well, I'll show them. All right, so there's no water to flush a toilet. First of all, if you ever take a shit and there's no water, man, that is a terrible thing. Oh my God, water is an incredibly important ingredient in the not foul-smelling bathroom equation. Otherwise, it's just you're just smelling direct human shit.
Just imagine a porta potty with any of that like blue liquid in it. It's, just imagine how gross that would be.
It assaults you. It hurts your nose and spirit a little.
So in reality, what they do is they have to use air, which is not, nearly as effective.
And not farts, by the way. You can't fart your turd away.
No, it doesn't really work. So they have to use air. And so air doesn't really work very well. So if your, fecal matter gets stuck on the side of the toilet, you have to clean it off. Because, nobody else is going to do it for you.
Well, I don't know if you've ever eaten some terrible street meat food and then been to the bathroom. That could happen with water. That is not a space unique circumstance. And it's a sad day when you have to go in your earthbound toilet and shit like an astronaut, but live like a stooge. Hey, at least I'm in space. I don't mind wiping a turd down with a napkin. No. I'm just gonna then go ride the bus after this.
There's nothing to take exciting. The bus home. Uh-oh.
If I was taking it home, that means I'm shitting somewhere else, and then fuck those people.
So that's on the space station and on the space shuttle, where there are actual toilets. Imagine the Gemini program and the Apollo program, where there are no toilets, because the Apollo space capsule and the Gemini space capsule is, the interior is the size of a, Volkswagen Beetle. And it's two guys in the interior of a Volkswagen Beetle. There's no separate bathroom.
And they're wearing, the equivalent of one of those sumo wrestler suits that people wear in equipment. So they are on top of each other. It's rush hour trained, crowded, dropping a deuce.
In a plastic bag.
It's not even like you sit on a toilet and there's a plastic bag in there and then you wrap it up and toss it out the window.
It's your regular seat.
You're holding a Ziploc bag to your asshole and praying to God you lined it up all right.
Yep. And then you have to... squirt bacteria side. What's the word for this? I'm too drunk to come up with the word.
Aseptic.
you have to squirt in antibacterial stuff and then squish it around with your hands. Because if you don't, the bacteria will create methane, which will then explode the plastic bag, which will escape the plastic bag you just took a dump in. And that is definitely way worse. And this was the case. And on the moon missions, the Apollo missions, they were together, the astronauts, they're three guys in a Volkswagen Beetle for 2 weeks.
Shitting in bags
for 2 weeks.
Oh, and spoiler, their aim was not true.
No, because there is a
great, great moment. At least one
great one, because, transcripts of everything recorded, everything recorded in the Apollo missions, they're written down and these are public information. There was one time where just... in the middle of a conversation, the guy, Jim Lovell or whatever, this is a famous fucking astronaut, famous. No, maybe it was Gene Cernan, the one who has a Netflix documentary called Last Man on the Moon. Anyway, he just died a couple months ago. But anyway, so he he was in the middle of a conversation with Houston, and then somebody goes, wait, what the fuck is that? He doesn't say fuck, because he's, you know, a gentleman. But anyway, he's saying, what is that? Whose is that?
I'm sorry.
So that's what it was.
He's a gentleman talking about a turd floating in
no,
space.
No, all he says, he's like in the middle of a conversation, then he says, hey, what? Whose is that? Whose is that? Because there was a turd floating, a free-floating turd floating around in the space capsule. And the other guys are like, well, it's not mine.
It's not mine. Mine had corn in it.
No, mine was stickier than that. It can't be mine. That's what they said. It can't be mine, you know. So anyway, there are only three people, so, you know.
Oh, that was,
I don't
that
think
was...
you need Agatha Christie to figure out who it was.
And then there were dumps.
Yep, exactly.
It was extremely funny reading that.
So really funny. There's another funny transcript.
Is there an audio recording of that somewhere? Because I really want to hear.
You know, there might be.
An astronaut's like, oh, who is that? And then the other guys are laughing. Like,
you know what? Because if we can find that, we'll put that into we'll edit that into our episode. Right
fucking,
now.
These are astronauts. Like, these are our best fucking whatever the fucks, whatever they are. And they're scientists or pilots and they're just laughing like 14-year-old boys at a turd floating. It's hysterical. How do you not laugh at that? It's so funny to just, yeah. Oh, god damn it. There's another turd floating in here. Is this, Apollo turds team? Oh, that's terrible. That's a dad joke. I'm sorry.
There's another funny story where on the moon, so all the, I don't know if it was Apollo 11, but one of the Apollo missions, Apollo 11 was the first one to go to the moon. Apollo, not Apollo 13, because they didn't make it. 14, 15. The three guys are out in their spacesuits, out on the moon, and one of them goes, oh man, I have the farts again. I have the farts again. I don't know what it is. It's all this citrus they're making us eat. I don't know what happened. And then after about 60 seconds to 2 minutes of this, you hear from NASA headquarters, I'm sorry, you have a live mic? You might want to control that just right now. You have a live mic, right? Are we just saying that? The guy's like, oh, all these farts. I don't know what it is. And this is what it's like to be an astronaut.
Well, that's what a straight diet of Tang will get you. Just farting up a goddamn storm. Sorry, I'm just trying to think of more dad jokes about farting in space. A pulo is just terrible. That's just so bad. I'm so sorry. Cut that out. That's all.
Yeah, no.
Probably leave it in, but it's really bad. So, all right, being an astronaut means shitting in your pants while you fly to your almost certain doom through space. Do you still want to be an astronaut?
Yes, I still want to be an astronaut. It would still be awesome.
It would. I agree. I will eat whatever crappy food out of a tube. Hopefully not the one the Russians used. I will shit in a bag. I've done it before. I'll do it again. I will sorrowfully masturbate by myself. So all those things. Each one of those elements has happened. I'll take them together. But to be in space. So worth it. Oh man, it's cool. There, you can still, if you're a nerd about this sort of thing, you could learn the names of every person who's been in space.
It's not very many.
It must be under 100. If you take every Apollo person and you take like the guys who just kind of like blipped into space, like John Glenn, where they just kind of like, I did a quick orbit or whatever. Yeah, and Yuri Gagarin.
And Mir, which wasn't around for very long. And
that was the 90s, right? That was,
on this International Space Station. Which has been a bunch of people, but not that many either.
Maybe 100 tops. I mean, if you're a person who's into data, sports people memorize way more names and information than that. Mm-hmm. These are people who have been into motherfucking space. That is so cool. So why is it so cool, though? I mean, I know it is cool, but explaining why it's cool is difficult.
It is. Well, okay, no. Explaining why it's cool isn't actually that bad. Isn't that difficult? Because I'm a nerd. I've been reading sci-fi my whole life because... You know, one thing you read on the internet, you know, born too late to explore the world, born too early to explore the, you know, the solar system or the cosmos. You know, we're living at this time when people do go to space, but it's just this tiniest select few. And who doesn't want to go visit another planet? Who doesn't want to visit another star system? Isn't really into either Star Wars or Star Trek. I mean, it has to be like most of the listeners of this podcast, for sure. One or both.
Right.
You know, both are pretty awesome. We won't get into which is better right now, because
No, we'll just say the Force is stronger with one of them.
That's an even nerdier podcast than this one.
So we're just going to live longer and prosperer.
So of course it's awesome. I totally would do that. Like, spiritually, being an astronaut would be the greatest thing in the universe. In the moment, it would be totally miserable. And a number of astronauts, or at least, you know, people on the space station for a couple of months, they've been become depressed and angry at their fellow astronauts, and just because it's so miserable to actually do it.
Oh, and you got guys' turds floating around.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know what? I don't think you'd be that miserable. I don't think it'd be the sort of thing you look back and like, man, that was cool. But it'd be like trying to have sex in an uncomfortable position where you're like in the backseat of a car or something like that. Like that works well in film. It's really not the best place to bone. It's really not great. But at the same time, like, oh, this is like, there's a fucking like handle for a window in my asshole right now. And I'm hitting my head on things and I don't know where to put this arm. But I'm also getting some. So I could put all of that aside because I am experiencing the whole of my preference. Whereas if you're in space, like, all right, there's an 8-inch thermometer in my asshole. I'm shitting in a bag. I'm eating dog food. But I'm in fucking space. So fuck you. This is way better. This is way better.
You know what? If you talk to some of the Apollo astronauts said, you know, I would have sold my family to go to space. They, even though they were aware of how miserable it was going to be because they had to do all the tests.
Is that an option? Can I just sell them?
No, it's not.
Can I just sell them for the chance to go to space? Just in case. Just in case it works out. Get on the wait list.
Sell your family for the wait list.
Totally. I'll sell your family for the wait list.
Oh, well, okay. I'm fucking fine.
Who wouldn't want to go in space? Because, I mean, not only about it being exclusive and it's an amazing thing, it is so cool. Like, you think about the entire history of the human species, which is, you know, 200,000 years, you get the primitive Homo sapiens.
Oh, sorry, 4,000 years?
Sorry, well Nate will provide the evangelical historical dates. So 200,000 years since humans started or 4,000 years.
Yeah, one or the other.
Take your pick. Like, going from fucking a bone and a fucking mammoth and you're just eating berries across Africa to all of a sudden being in space. I mean,
think about fucking space.
Think about all the other shit that's happened on this planet. You're like, dinosaurs, hands down, super cool. They were around for millions of years. They didn't go to goddamn space. They didn't even invent pants. Fuck dinosaurs. Space is awesome. That is a thing. That is one of the many things that separates us from the other shitty, stupid species on this planet that we eat. Right? That is an awesome thing to do.
That make delicious soup.
Right? No, not all those soups are equally delicious. Some soups are more delicious than others. Oh man, I just got a great borscht job from this cosmonaut. Oh man. Space is fucking amazing because that's us as whatever monkey species we are, whatever millions of years of evolution, saying like, fuck you Earth, we're gonna go farther. We're gonna go further too. Whatever you prefer. Actually, they're both correct. We're gonna do both.
Fuck you, English majors.
It is both. It is both. That is so exciting and interesting. Who wouldn't want to do that? Who wouldn't sell Nate's family to do it? Anyone would. It's super cool. Sure.
Or your own family.
I'll sell whoever's listening. Your family too. What's your name? Huh? Yep. Them too. Anyone. Space is fucking cool. I mean, you know what? Louis C.K. had a thing about this with, what was that shitty movie, Gravity? Saying how, I heard him talking about it on like Opie and Anthony or something. He's saying how Sandra Bullock's character is not really that excited about going to space. And how, here's how it would really work when you go for that interview. And I'm totally butchering his joke, which is way funnier. But you go and the NASA person like, oh, so do you want to go to space? And she's like, I guess. And like, no, you're not going to space. Fuck you. Because there are 1,000 people who are like, oh my God, I'll suck your dick to go to space right now. Gladly.
There are, you know, the Mars One program.
Oh my God. Yes.
So this is a program, which is probably not really going to happen, where sign up.
Knock on wood.
Where people sign up for a one-way trip for Mars. Like this company or whatever it is, they're not even pretending they're going to bring you back. This is a one-way trip, if you even make it. And something like 100,000 people signed up for their like initial, for their initial sign up. But they're going to narrow it down from there. But 100,000 signed up for what is definitely a suicide mission.
Whoa. It's a very slow suicide.
Very, very inevitable. Very slow, but inevitable suicide mission.
But the plan is not just like, all right, we're going to launch you in a rocket into the face of Mars and then see what happens.
Then boom.
It's their plan, mm-hmm. which is probably stupid, but their plan is we will send supplies, mm-hmm. right? We're going to send those ahead of time as a way to kind of cut down on the cost. So you ride in a rocket with whatever, and it's going to be cramped. It's going to be uncomfortable. But hey, this is the price we pay to go to this next level, and some people are totally willing to pay it. And then every so often, every year or 2 years, whatever it is, we will send more people with the one-way ticket and gradually build an actual colony on Mars. I think that is fucking awesome. Is it going to happen? Probably not. But God damn it, do I want it to happen.
That's cool.
That's fucking super cool. That's like, you know, think about though, it's like Mary Roach is like 6 months of noisy, cramped travel to get to Mars. Well, when people were traveling from Europe to the New World in the 1500s, that was like 3 months in the fucking belly of a ship
with no sight of land. You don't even know if you're going to fall off the edge of the world. I mean, okay,
I think they pretty much knew they weren't going to do that. But they also didn't know there's a good chance we just wander in the sea till we starve to death.
Yeah. And people did it. Hundreds at a time.
Yeah. And that takes a big pair of fucking balls to do that. This is, you know, that's us 500 years ago. That is so cool to do it, to go to Mars. Like, I understand why someone would do that. Now, what's really interesting, there are people who've signed up who are, like, married or have children. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, all right, I have an understanding with my spouse. We would get divorced, I'd go to Mars, and they could suck a bag here on Earth. Here's a bag of dicks for you. That is, the fact that people are even willing to consider that still tells you how exciting, how alluring space is. Yeah. Now, what is it about space? Other than it just totally defies everything about our existence to go to another planet. It's fucking super cool, though.
Mm-hmm.
So,
in 100 years, when people are still listening to this podcast, they'll go, oh, what? How quaint they are wanting to go to Mars.
What do you suspect will have happened?
100 years from now, either we'll all be dead. No, that will definitely happen. Either the world will have, well, the world we'll be will dead, have
personally.
Completely blown itself up, or there will be a Mars colony.
That's badass. Well, when you're listening to this podcast in the future,
the Drunk Eyes Mars Book Club will totally think this book is quaint.
They will. It'll be like a historical artifact, which is kind of how all science books work at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. I know we're not going to see it. We missed the really cool stuff. We were born after the space race, and we will not quite see the thing. But you know what? That's what Ray Bradbury's for. We could
mm-hmm.
we could read that and see. We could know what is to come. Being an astronaut, fucking cool, hands down. Anyone who says otherwise, douche.
Yeah.
Most important question of the day. We had two beers today. Cleverly chosen by us that have to do with this topic. Unearthly and Red Thunder. If you're going on the Mars One lander, whatever the fuck it's called tomorrow, you could take one. What are you going to take?
If I had to, this is almost like the if you were stranded on a desert island question, what would you take with you?
It's exactly like that, yeah.
I would take Unearthly. Not that the other beer was bad, but I definitely like IPAs, and this was a delicious IPA. I would take that.
It's interesting because I liked them both a lot. You know, a lot of times we record and there's a weaker beer, you know, there's a beer mm-hmm. like, yeah, that one's okay. Not a lot of times, but sometimes.
This is a good Budweiser.
Yeah, that's our high praise insult, our backhanded compliment.
Damning with faint praise.
Yeah. So both of these beers I really, really enjoy. I actually would pick the other one. Maybe because I have had a shit ton of IPA. Unearthly is a fantastic IPA, but that other one, Red Thunder, there's like complexity to it. There's more going on. And if I had to sip one thing, I'd like something that has a lot of different things that I can kind of, you know, for someone with an okay palate, not like I'm a, you know, sommelier, that I could taste it and say, oh, well, look at that. I noticed this thing about it this time. So I might go with that.
Okay.
Mars One, if you're looking for two drunk guys to send into Mars and they can only pick one beer, we'll figure it out. You just tell us where to show up.
All you have to do is send us an email at drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com or
follow us on Twitter at drunkguysbc, as in book club.
Or give us a rating on iTunes. 5 stars. Minimum. Have to give us 5 stars. No choice.
Yes, clearly, obviously. 5 stars for us. Or can you even do that on Google Play? If you can't, do it.
Know. Google Play is stupid.
Yeah, that's
fine. Can we just say that?
And we could say it. Or what's that? Stitcher. We're also available on Stitcher. And maybe one day, somewhere else. I don't know. We got a lot of different places. Check us out. Give us a rating if you can. We'd appreciate it. And we will see you next week when we are going to be reading
Cavalier and Clay
by Michael Chabon. So start reading now because it's a big book, but it is worth it. We will see you then. Take care.